creation of that.
Council member, you know, so,
yeah, so that's how I explain it.
Yeah, right. I agree. I concur.
We're really looking at terms,
I mean, I think
of, especially
really
stuff
good,
like that.
Because I think, in fairness, I could say if I was like,
because you know what, we're not really effective at making
this girl. Okay,
we shoo them out of there.
Yeah,
right. An hour later, that.
You can bring them out.
So what do we really?
And I'm happy for the
we're gonna start.
Sorry,
don't get us started.
Although I'm a very good system, I want to start like giving you soup and
yeah. All right, so we're gonna go ahead and head into the meeting. Level 3, predatory offender ordinance discussion. So we're going to go ahead and kick that off. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you for having me again tonight. I only have like 6 or 7 slides, very short. There's a few maps that I'm going to show you, and it's just an opportunity for you guys to kind of give me some direction on this potential ordinance. So, the residency restrictions that we focused on in the maps that we created were limitations on distance from parks, schools, child care centers, and places of worship. And then we also added in distance from other level 3 predatory offenders. That is something that is in some of the other ordinances that we've seen in other cities, and something that I know that the city manager asked about that. How we measure, I had this question from a couple people, so I thought I would throw it in there. This is a pretty common way of measuring, essentially from wherever the predatory offender lives, the edge of their property to the edge of whatever it is, the school, park, whatever. Our John Nergy, our GIS whiz, who is phenomenal, did a lot of great work on this for me, is easy, really good at whipping up these maps. So, the first of the three maps I'm going to show you is 1,000 feet from these places. Schools, parks, child care centers, places of worship. Now, you'll see a lot of red. That's the exclusion zone. That's where predatory offenders would not be able to move into. This accounts for 93% of residential and apartment parcels. They're all within the exclusion zone.
Sounds about right.
You'll see that we're mostly, that's where they can live are areas that are not housing, right? Like they're like this northwest area that doesn't have any housing or doesn't have anything, or streets, essentially.
There's going to be a biotech district up there.
That's right. There won't be housing there anyway, so.
Let's put dollar signs there.
Next one, okay, so one thing I want to mention. So I did 1,000 feet because this is Brooklyn Park. We've got a lot of parks. You'll see 2,000 feet in a lot of cities, and they can get away with that because they don't have the amount of parks that we have. Mm-hmm. So that's why I did 1,000 feet here. So then I said, what happens if we do 300 feet from parks? The idea being they wouldn't be living immediately adjacent to that park, right? And 1,000 feet from the other places. Well, that leaves us with 78% of the residential and apartment parcels are within the exclusion. The next map is 300 feet from parks, 500 feet from child care centers, places of worship, and 1,000 feet from other predatory offenders. That leaves us with 61% of residential and apartment parcels that are available for level 3 predatory offenders to move into. One thing that I would point out is we can add the 1,000 feet from other predatory offenders to this map as well, or even this one if you chose to go with it. That's something we can still plug in there. We have 20 predatory offenders, level 3 predatory offenders, currently living in the city. Those 20 were plugged into this map, and then they would be excluded from, like, those people would be, have exceptions because they're living here now, but any incoming level 3 predatory offenders would not be able to live within 1,000 feet of them. I would point out that we have a couple, we have 4 that are living together, not in the same house, but 2 in one group home and 2 in another group home. So that is a common issue for us. The one upside to the 1,000 feet from other predatory offenders is if you went with, let's say you went with a map like this, you could end up with an enclave of predatory offenders living. It could be untold, right? Especially if there's a bunch of group homes there. I wanted to put this kind of in context for you, so I called the city of Maple Grove and I asked for their map. They don't publish their map, they don't put it online, but it says in their ordinance that if you call their city clerk, you can get it. So I called their city clerk. I asked them what percentage of their housing stock is in exclusion zone, and they did not have that answer, so I can't tell you. I would say that it's gotta be a relatively high percentage, just looking at the map, but I don't know exactly what it is. So the exceptions we talked about, essentially, they would allow exceptions for current level three predatory offenders that are living here. And then the focus is on if they were a minor when they committed the offense, they're not convicted as an adult. This is very common language that I've seen in almost all of the ordinances that I've looked through. The official map I would recommend for us, that is something that the police department manages. Now, I would have to call John Nerdy every time I have one made, but the upside to us managing it is if we have something in the ordinance saying that a level three predatory offender cannot live a certain distance from another level three predatory offender, well, we track that already. We're already looking at that, so it's probably best for us to be the contact point for that. And that brings us to enforcement, or essentially at the end here. The ordinances that I looked at makes this a misdemeanor. It does also point out that every additional day that they live there is considered a new violation. I did see Champlin has some language that regarding some civil recourse, and I would hold it on Mr. Thompson to be able to answer any questions around that, but it specifically talks about the city may enforce this section by mandamus, injunction, or other appropriate civil remedies, including administrative penalties. That's it.
All right. Well, I will, before, okay, so I saw you, Councilor. I'll say before this, for me, in terms of legal advice, before we jump into this, because I'm kind of in favor just from talking to the community and even folks that live, that run some kind of care facilities, they're even looking for some support around this in terms of a more stringent approach. But I want to just, what are some of the legal guardrails when it comes to this, right? And then the retroactive nature of it. What's kind of the standard, not standard, but what's the best legal advice on that retroactive piece, but also what are the guardrails?
Yeah, thank you. And you're doing competing things there, right? The easiest ones to get sustained are the ones where you have the greatest availability for them to live, but that's contradicting a little bit to the policy you're trying to achieve, right? So there's a balancing here. A lot of cities have these ordinances. We all question how enforceable they are, quite frankly. There haven't been challenged, other cities have, you know, enforced them. So I would not recommend the first one. Okay, it's a little too restrictive. So it's going to be somewhere in the middle. With respect to the civil recourse portion, I would recommend that you would include that for this reason. A misdemeanor doesn't get these people moved, okay? We've had this in other cities with like junk properties, and you prosecute. I've had this in one of my cities. It was it's a little bit like the one we're dealing with now in Brooklyn Park, where we had to bring enforcement action against them, okay? Civil action to get them to remove the 25 vehicles they have on their property. We did this in another city. They prosecuted the property owner first. The judge said, I found you guilty. I'm going to put you on probation. I'm going to give you 60 days to clean it up. And the property owner says, put me in jail. So he went to jail for 60 days, came back, was still on his property. Okay, so 95% of the time, criminal remedies encourage people to clean up things because they don't want to go to jail, but occasionally you get that. And I don't know where that would lie here, but I would recommend you put a civil remedy in there that would allow you to bring an injunction action against the individual and get a court order enjoining them from not living there. So I do recommend that.
Okay.
Mayor, can I ask a question? So being that we have to register all level three sex offenders, and most of them are at a group home or rental property, it's not like they're buying a home, right? Their lion's share are going into rental property. Is there a mechanism in which we catch that on the registration? Like, no. Like, we can't register you because you are not allowed to live there.
You mean like when they notify us, hey, I'm moving to Brooklyn Park.
Yes.
We look at our map and go, no, you can't.
Yes.
That's how I envision this happening. That's literally how I envision this ordinance being functional. So we have detectives within the police department that do predatory offender registry. They get every single notification. When they get that notification, they send it to me, we send it out publicly. My anticipation would be they get the notification, they look at the map, and they say, nope, that's not an option. And they let them know, like, you cannot live here.
Yeah, so we wouldn't register to that address, and so then they would be in violation.
Oh.
If they moved there, they'd be in violation of state law, and then we'd just arrest them for failure to register.
Right.
The reason I asked that, that's the way I envisioned it, I'm a little uneasy about the constitutionality, as we denied the registration based on the city ordinance that may or may not be constitutional, and then now we're making an arrest because you went to the house we told you you couldn't live at because of the ordinance that says that you're in the wrong place on the map. Are you following?
Yeah, but, right, I am. But you still have problems. When you get an ordinance on the books or statute on the books, it's got to, if someone makes a motion, you prosecute somebody with a misdemeanor, their attorney thinks that ordinance is unconstitutional, they're going to raise that as a defense in the criminal prosecution.
Yeah.
And you could lose, but I don't think it's going to be an invalid arrest.
Right. No, I would agree.
Yeah, right.
And I would, there's ones that are worth taking the chance. In my opinion, as a police chief, these are the ones you take a chance on. As somebody who's known likely to reoffend and be a sexual predator, I'd have no problem making that arrest in that case. But I just said, I envisioned it working like the way you thought as well.
Yeah.
Councilman Erickson, could you go to the next map for 301,001? So it looks like they didn't include, because like at 73rd and 252 on the southwest corner, there's a church right there.
Mm-hmm.
Did we not take into account churches and schools in our neighboring municipality?
73rd and 252.
The Brooklyn Center border, the southwest corner there. There's a church right there.
Oh, but the church is in Brooklyn Center.
Right here, but the church is in Brooklyn Center.
Yeah, that's why John Derry would have not caught it.
Oh, good catch.
Good catch. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering what you're talking about. I'm like, oh, across the street.
Yeah. I was trying to think of the church also, but no. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. This ordinance does not take into account neighboring cities, child care centers and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if any do. I'd have to think through.
Would that be legally defensible to use another jurisdiction's school as a reason that you wouldn't? Okay.
Yes.
I'd have to just think through the GIS implications. Like, we have all of our layers for Brooklyn Park. I don't know if we have Brooklyn Centers and Champlin's and Maple Grove's and Plymouth, who we also border.
Mm-hmm. Like in the southwest there, I don't think Meadow Lake is taken into account.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I know Councilmember Page, Councilmember Menard.
Just curious, Inspector?
Yes.
Why do we drop from 1,000 all the way down to 300 in one pop? Is there any in between there that's manageable?
Yeah, I mean, and we can look at that. The issue really is, percentage-wise, we have so many parks in Brooklyn Park that even like as you drop down, like the percentage, the exclusion zone remains really high. And you know, if we said we want something between 78 and 93, then we could try to dial in, you know what I'm saying? But that was how we, you know, tried to dial that percentage down, was to change a little bit in the distances.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not an attorney at all, but we didn't design these parks. I mean, our city founders didn't really design these parks, considering that we'd be having this discussion.
Right.
So should we be penalized for that? Is that something we would take into account? Or?
Yeah. Let me take an analogy. It might help. This issue used to come up all the time with sexual-oriented businesses, okay? And the law on that is that there's a few standards you have to meet. One of them is you have to allow them a reasonable opportunity area in the city to operate. Reasonable opportunity. Okay. Now, the reason for that is they're protected by the First Amendment. Now, these are whether the residency is constitutionally protected or not, that's still a little bit of a question, I think. But I would use that phraseology. But it is case by case, because you could have a city for, you know, that's 95% residential, small towns, and there's be no opportunity for them. But you have other areas where cities have commercial, half residential, and they have all sorts of places that they could do. So it does depend a little bit. So in some ways, if this was an adult use, yeah, you would be penalized because you have so many parks, and you'd say, you know, if we can't have 500 feet from a park, it might work here. It might work in Maple Grove, might not work here because of your physical constraints. And the court would say, wait a minute, no, you're a separate jurisdiction. You have to allow these a reasonable opportunity, in these cases, a reasonable opportunity for these people to live. What does that mean? In the context of adult uses, you know, depending, it would be to, I'll be careful here, but, you know, so I know some cities got away with 5%, okay, because of their uniqueness, and they said, you could win those cases, we had 5% of your area available. So yes, it does. Each vagrancy of a city will come into play in this, because it's done jurisdiction by jurisdiction.
Councilman Mayor.
Then my second question is the party who's in violation the sex offender or the group home that's offered space to the sex offender?
That's a really good question. It would be the sex offender that would be in violation. But kind of begs another question of, is there a mechanism in which we can hold group homes accountable?
I would like to see that.
I'd have to think through that a little bit more. I know that's something that we've all kind of discussed in the past.
Or would that fall under the law that has given that authority to the state to monitor and...
Yeah, I want to take a closer look at that. Is the goal to try not to have these congregate in these group homes, or is the goal to, you know, be more careful about, you know, our one property, residential property? So
which one is most constitutional?
Less is better.
I was going to say yes.
All right, less is better. I got it.
Both.
I would suggest this topic is in our community a lot. I have been approached by this overwhelmingly in the last 2-3 weeks. People are paying attention to this. Yeah. And they don't like that we have 20 sex offenders in this community.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think we have a ton because of congregate care facilities, and that's a longer term issue that we have to address. So I think however we can affect that piece is going to be key to it, right? I think if we had a different housing makeup and not as many congregate care facilities, we wouldn't have the same issue. We might not even be having this particular discussion. So I think it's just reducing that number.
Okay, one question. So when do you find out about these predatory offenders being here? After they moved in or
no.
Before?
No, they have to let us know before. All right. It's usually 5 days, something like that. I have to look at the statute. But it's a short time before they move in, and they don't ask. They just say, this person is moving to this location. We're notifying you because...
Oh, it's a notification from the state.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And so one thing that has happened, I know this has happened with Brooklyn Park, is that when people are placing sex offenders, they know Brooklyn Park doesn't have an ordinance and doesn't push back. Mm-hmm. They know that we're easy to deal with. And so... I think that's driving our higher numbers as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mayor Robinson, I'm sorry. Councilmember Klonowski has a question.
Councilmember Page, and then we'll have Councilmember Klonowski.
You know, I have a whole bunch.
So Councilmember Klonowski.
Just don't forget me.
You can say it loud, she's...
Councilmember Klonowski?
Yeah, I heard you. Thanks, Mayor. I heard the attorney asked what our goal is. I think the goal, everyone has stated before, is to do our best to protect residents, children, and women who are most often targeted by these sex offenders. And as was explained to us, these sex offenders typically or predators to children. So my question is, if that is the goal, moving it down to, you know, 300 feet from schools, daycare centers, places of worship, is that really doing what we're trying to do? Could we take places of worship out and have it focus on schools and childcare centers and see if that keeps it a little bit more of a manageable percentage? I feel like parks are probably one of the most important things to be protecting children, as they're going to be most often less supervised.
Yeah, questions for me, I take it. So the problem being the parks, like, we can take places of worship out, but they're not driving this number, just plain and simple. We don't have nearly as many. The parks are not just, do we have a lot of them, but they're everywhere in the city. And I turned my computer on because I have an email from John Nerdy about this when we were talking about parks. But just the parks alone, the 1,000 feet is a huge, huge percentage just because of the parks. So that's why we lowered the parks, just the parks, from 1,000 to 300, thinking, okay, well, we have to get this number. Like, we can't have it 100%. If we get this number down, at least we can protect the areas immediately surrounding the parks, like those adjacent properties. You can't live there, but still keep the numbers high for places of worship and things like that. That's not to say that we can't play with that number more and look at, you know, what does 700 feet look like or what does 800 feet look like. And it would be helpful if I had a slider where I could just, like, drag it over. And I asked for that. That was not something that was easy
to do, so. I have a question about, to the attorney Thompson. You're saying some cities are specifying that they have extenuating circumstances due to the structure of their city. Well, wouldn't, just by the nature of, we have so many parks, it's a defining characteristic of our city, count as that in a way to still maintain the protection for children?
Yes. I'll give you an example. Book of Park adopts this, it's 300 feet from parks and this, and you have 75% of the residents are within the exclusionary zone, okay? The city, another city has 300 feet and only 50% are excluded. That doesn't make our ordinance invalid simply because we have less area than another city, okay? If 300 feet is a reasonable distance separation, I would think the circumstances of Brooklyn Park would favor us in that situation.
Yeah. And what do we designate smoking from parks? How many feet?
I think it's just in the parks.
Yeah.
I don't think
just
it's a distance from the park.
Yeah, that's what I recall as well.
Okay. Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I looked at keep the attorney's advice in this, but I agree with the chief too. Some things are worth fighting over. Thank you.
All right, Councilmember Page.
So I have lots to go over, but first I just wanted you to know I did read all of the every single one that was on there. I had 23 that I could read. Only two of them were prior to 2022. Most of them are transient, like you guys had mentioned before. So I think that's a good thing. Most of them did not offend with small children. So there's violent crimes against women and men that I saw. And so this is a discussion, so I just want to say it out loud. I also did talk to four congregate care folks who said the state will let them kick them out. So we're up against that as well, and I'm not sure what we can do. But it seems to me if we align with current ordinances from, like, sister cities or reasonable size cities or reasonable demographic cities, that we would be in good company with those ordinances if we were to do something, like, basically not reinvent the wheel.
Right.
it was my thought process on that. And I think big picture, if we're looking at our priorities, this would be a really good lesson, because when you went on the news, everybody flipped out. And I had to tell everybody that we can't, it's the state, it's the. So I felt like we could be a little bit more organized with that. So I wanted to have that as a lesson, where we put that into our priorities for the narrative of Brooklyn Park. I think this is an amazing opportunity. I love how swiftly you've worked, how detailed it's been, and I would love to see action fast, because I think that'll be in our favor for the safety of our residents. So I just wanted to put that in the discussion. And I think it's super clear, like the mayor said, we don't want so many congregate care. We don't want, I think there's only houses with two, not more than two in a house, I think. Is that right? I don't think there's more than two in any of the group homes.
Correct.
Right? And so I love the concept of adding offenders, is that the right word? Within so many feet of that. But somehow, if we're making it really clear to our residents, we value, it's more than just the kids, it really, really is. And we're protecting our kids first and foremost, and our residents, I get that. But there are, you know, adult men and women that they have offended against these folks and bad stuff. So if you have a chance, I would suggest you guys read it. But my biggest point is, I think that we are set up for success if we mirror other cities, because we are going from zero to something great no matter what we do. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Mayor Winston, I'm sorry. Councilman.
Yes. Okay. I know that Chief Brulee, and then we'll have Councilman Petrino. Thank you.
Just 2 points is, we at the police department get a non-public version of the details, really detailed. It is really bad, way worse than what you're reading on the public version of it.
Yep.
And all of them, I read every single one that comes in. It's beyond concern. Two is, you're right, like group homes would not be able to kick people out, the state wouldn't allow them, because it wouldn't have no like legal authority, right? This mechanism that we're talking about in ordinance really prevents them from moving in, because essentially we will not register them to that address because they're not allowed to be there. So they won't be able to live at that address.
Are they grandfathered in, I guess?
Yes, I'm sorry. So if you're referencing the 20 that we have today, you're absolutely correct. So over time, attrition, they'll just fall off. And all right, perfect. Just want to make sure we were clear on that.
Yes, thank you.
So I know we had Councilmember Tramp, but quickly, I think that's one of the things that I was thinking is maybe expanding it from 300 to 500 feet and some of the other things we've talked about. But I think the fact that this is proactive and that the folks, some of the folks that we're talking about who have been these offenders, level 3 offenders, are very transient. So it seems like some of them will fall off. Once we put this in place, it's not so easy for them to bring those numbers back up. So I think that's going to be key when we look at this, to understand that at 20 is not permanent. They're going to be transient. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Tran. Councilmember Tran.
She's off.
Okay.
It is too clear.
I don't know what you said.
Yeah, real quick question. So this is level 3 sex offenders?
Yes.
Do any cities have in place anything for level 2 sex offenders?
Not that I've seen. In all told, we have 230 predatory offenders living in the city. So I haven't seen anything that is geared at level 1s and 2s. And actually, there is a small caveat there. There are some predatory offenders that are public because they're deemed really high risk or hazard, but they're not level 3s or actually level 2s. We have a couple of those in the city. Essentially, the court has found them to be sexually but still very high risk, so those are public as well.
Are we able to, if the council wanted to, put anything in place for any offender other than level 3?
I think that would be a great question.
I don't think the statute allows that, but I'll have to double check. Okay, I mean,
the way it goes is level 1, 2, and 3, and these are the restrictions you can do for 1. The statute allows. If you get down to level 2, you can do everything you do for level 1 plus D's. If you get down to level 3, you can regulate D's any way you can do 1 and 2 plus additional ones. And I think this residency is not on 1 or 2, it's added on at 3, but I have to double check that.
Okay. All right. Councilmember John. Right, and then we had Councilmember Anderson. And then we should be able to wrap it up.
I was wondering, Attorney Thompson, even if there is limitations, you know, that might put us into a lawsuit, could we then argue the fact that we already have like 4 times more compared to our neighboring cities?
I'd like to say yes, but I don't think you could. Because the reason for that is that with respect to this person, have you given this person a reasonable opportunity to live? And the fact that you have others probably, the sexual oriented business is a good example. You had 4, but you say this is where you'd be, and this one comes in, and they work, you can't deny it because you have 4 more. Not using this type of restriction anyway.
So then, if we were to just do it in a way of 1,000 feet, within each other, right, within the 21 that we have now, would that still, be valid? And then, can we do a change of ordinance later on?
Instead of, or in addition to?
In addition.
Instead of, as of right now, actually.
So I think one of the ways, mm-hmm. so that we can just, before you ask your question, go further, one of the things I was thinking is, okay, instead of 300 feet, why don't we increase it to 500 feet? I think that's a reasonable risk to take. 1,000 for churches, for schools, and then between offenders, 1,000 each, right? I think there was a map that had something where it was a mixture of 300 feet and then additional restrictions for the schools and the churches and stuff like that. And I think maybe that might be defensible, right? Because you're getting that 500, but then you're asking for it. It can't be within 1,000 feet of one another. And then they can't be within 1,000 feet of schools, churches, things of that nature. I feel like that's a decent compromise, and it's probably stringent enough for what our residents are looking for. So,
can we get the comparison of the other cities so we can see how we align? Because if it's reasonable, other people are doing reasonable. That's just Maple Grove.
Yeah.
I mean, can we do other cities and find out other cities? Because reasonable might be 1,000. And why not?
I think we can. I think we should do that before we come with the final one. I said the only thing is I don't want to slow the process down too much where we have to have another work session. The other piece is that I think the difference between those cities and Brooklyn Park is going to be that Brooklyn Park has all of these parks, which just makes it, and I don't know of any other cities that literally
So we wouldn't were, need, is that what you're saying?
What's
so
that?
So we wouldn't really need the 1,000 because we're going to butt up to those parks with the 500?
I think other cities would not have that issue, yeah, because there's so many, mm-hmm. so that 500 would probably cover a ton of territory.
Yeah, understood.
Councilmember Garvey.
Sorry to drag this out.
Yeah.
But how many of our parks have playgrounds? And could we exclude parks without playgrounds?
I wouldn't. Adults go where there aren't playgrounds. I'm sorry, is this an open discussion? I apologize.
This is a work session.
Yeah, so,
I mean just adults, trying to be reasonable.
If there's a vulnerable adult or there's someone who's an adult that they're going to prey on.
No, I don't doubt.
They won't be at the playground. They'll be at maybe an open field that's a park or whatever. So I don't know if I would support that.
I don't dispute that, but I'm just talking about possibilities or what I'm looking to see what's legal within the...
Oh, I would go under the assumption that children are going to disproportionately use any park compared to adults. And so
for sure.
That nature.
Any park?
Any park.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know you want to...
Just one quick question. Have you done a map? Do you know what the impact is of adding distance restrictions from another offender? Does that throw a wrench into it?
This, not a huge difference.
Okay.
So this is that. This has our all of our offenders mapped on here. And I thought through this a little bit, kind of to your point. Let's say we went with this map and we put the offenders in here and said you got to be 1,000 feet from other offenders. It's probably going to change it a little bit, but not a lot, because most of them are probably already living in an exclusion zone already, right? A. But B, in the future, it will change. So someone will come to Brooklyn Park and be like, okay, where can I live? They'll pick a spot, they'll move in right here, and now all of a sudden you'll have a bubble here, right? So it will actually change over time. The 78% could turn into 83 or something along those lines as they start to move into areas of the city and create larger exclusion zones.
The reason I raise this, and I understand the rationale for wanting not to congregate, but remember, rationale here is you don't want them near people that might be victims.
Right.
And another offender is not going to be a victim. I could see a court question, well, why are you limiting it from another sex offender when they're not likely to be the victim you're worried about here? So I want to look at that a little bit more closely. But I understand the goal.
I got you.
Test question. To that point, a lot of the group homes that we have, the number of them serve folks with mental health challenges. You know, in addition, you know, a little bit to your point, Councilor Page, in terms of victims aren't just youth, they're adults too, but also potentially, I know one of the conversations Chief Bowie and I have had is sex offender being in a group home with a group home that serves vulnerable adults.
Right.
Has that been part of the conversation too, in terms of proximity to?
That's a huge concern. It's happening now.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure what all is public, but I am very concerned about one individual that is in a group home now because of their past.
With a group home that serves vulnerable adults or other group homes?
The initials. Is there a W?
It's a legitimate problem now.
There a W in the name? That's all I need to know.
I don't know the name.
A significant number of CSC, or what we call criminal sexual conduct crimes, that occur in congregate care facilities, and they're not necessarily always registered, right? They may have been previous history of it, but that doesn't mean that they get registered as a level 3 sex offender.
Yeah.
They might be a level 1 or 2, or a lot of times they just have not gone through the process. So a lot of times they get what's called a Rule 20, where they don't... they are found competent to even stand trial, and they get placed back out in the community and start popping from group home to group home. And yeah, victimization relative to, you know, the number of congregate care facilities we have is high. It's a problem already. And at level 3s is beyond concerning.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think I'll just voice my opinion. I very much agree with Councilmember Panowski. I think it's worth the risk, of a lawsuit. At the end of the day, if our goal is to protect our children and our residents, then I think, you know, we don't even know if we're actually going to be, in an actual lawsuit, right? And on top of that as well, too, considering Brooklyn Park's circumstances and putting into consideration how many are already within the city, I think... even if we are to abide by what is considered, you know, fair, accessible, that's just going to be bringing in more offenders. Mm-hmm. And so I personally am willing to take that risk just because I'm not willing to risk our kids, our residents, just for the sake of a lawsuit that might not happen.
I agree, 100%.
Can I ask a question to the council? From what I've been hearing so far tonight is you're willing to take a little bit of risk, maybe not this much risk, maybe this much risk.
I think a little more risk than that.
Okay, so that was going to be my question. Do you have a general percentage? Because I can make the map fit the percentage that's kind of in your mind.
Well, that's what I was thinking, you know, when you hear from other folks, right? But that's why I was thinking instead of 300, what does 500 or 600 look like? In addition to adding the thousands of schools and churches and all that other stuff, right? So what would that map look like? I think it would be redder than that, right? I thought that was kind of a, if we're gonna go towards more risk, right? That seemed like something that's workable.
Yeah, and that's, I guess what I'm saying is, if you have an idea of what you want, I can figure out the distances from the different locations to fit your need.
Right.
And that will probably keep the process moving a lot faster than making three more maps to bring back.
This does not include congregate care facilities, correct?
Correct. Congregate care facilities, they're a little difficult because we actually don't know where all of them are. True. We think we have about 450, but we don't actually know.
My only thought process, which you started me thinking, I mean, if you ask the data, it's a little anecdotal, but I would stand by it to prove it otherwise. We have way more CSC crimes that occur at congregate care facilities than we do of CSCs in parks. Agree with that?
No question.
I mean, it's not even the same park. Like, we're trying to protect parks, but I'll tell you, our CSCs are occurring in our congregate care facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like to me, like, if we really want to be defensible, that data would mine out in a lawsuit to say, well, of course Brooklyn Park's trying to protect level threes from congregate care facilities because the data shows they're having lots of CSCs occur in congregate care facilities. It would be a very defensible link. Parks might be hard if we went to lawsuit. I mean, I think we take the risk. I want to make it clear where I stand on it. But if we go to have to be in court and say, well, why did you restrict it from parks? Vulnerable people are there, but we don't have a lot of data that says people are being raped in our parks. We just don't. Thankfully, it doesn't occur a lot.
But we can tie it to, so we can legally tie it to congregate care facilities?
Yes.
Like a $500 foot.
Whatever you'd want to do, I think we could just, there's clear and compelling data to say, like, that is where our CSCs are occurring now. That's not necessarily by level threes, but just that's where we have more CSCs occurring than in parks. It seems more defensible. To me, it makes sense to include that in this map of vulnerable people because, for example, where you are seeing all these missing persons up, it's because they're vulnerable and missing, and the state law requires us to post them publicly that we're looking for. Those are majority from congregate care facilities because they're labeled as vulnerable individuals.
Well, I'm not opposed to that at all. If the research shows, and it does, just anecdotally, but I think we kind of know in our own city, then I would say tie it to that. Is it overly prohibitive to tie it to that and schools and parks?
No, but at the end of the day, it's going to end up a little bit like what the map looks like. Depending on what the map looks like.
Okay. Well, we have 60 parks in the city of Brooklyn Park. We have 450 congregate care facilities.
And if you can't, we have to do a little homework.
We've
got to make sure we know where we're at.
Group homes or congregate care facilities that are serving the vulnerable adults. That's not all 450. You know, some like
for sure.
homes are for
sure.
youth or...
Or senior living centers. They are technically a congregate care facility, but they're not. Right. And they're not why we were down at the Capitol, right? Those are really well-run facilities that are unrelated.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And I don't know how we would classify them necessarily.
Detective Brown would probably shed some good light on that.
Absolutely.
I guess I'd want to hear from you. I'm comfortable with including... I guess if we can narrow down the type of congregate care facilities where vulnerable adults are, and then parks and churches, right? I think that makes sense.
Can I throw two more wrenches in the works? So, like this map, for example, it looks like part of Autumn Park and part of Eden Park are not in exclusion zones.
Autumn Ridge and Eden Park.
Oh, yeah, Autumn Ridge and Eden Park.
Yep.
That concerns me because... I mean, I drive by Autumn Ridge all the time, and there's kids just out playing on the lawn, unsupervised, using the pool, whatever. Like, I'd be really concerned about a level 3 sex offender living there where there's just so many children out playing and unsupervised, and I don't know how we would deal with that, but, I mean, there's a lot of kids that live in those places.
Yeah.
I think Huntington Place is safe because of Zanewood, but...
Right.
And then the second thing is, I mean, our congregate care, like the group homes are in neighborhoods, as are licensed in-home daycares. And what is the interplay between those two?
Yeah, I have to be totally honest with you, I think it's going to be really difficult to have a map that separates out congregate care facilities that are assisted living facilities that are focused on vulnerable folks.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. They're done, the state has two different entities that license these facilities, and they have all sorts of different licensure. I've gone through these now. Every time the news calls, they have questions about it. So I've learned a lot about this lately. They don't call them the same things, and a lot of them are just called assisted living. Now, assisted living might mean old folks that are living there that just need a little bit of help. It might be people with severe physical disabilities. It might be people with severe mental disabilities. It could be people with behavioral problems. It could be people that are simply homeless and have nowhere else to go. I do think it would be very difficult to categorize and then actually catalog every single group home in the city and focus solely on those with vulnerable individuals. Okay. Not to mention the fact that vulnerable is kind of a moving target, right? Yeah. So I'm glad we're moving in the direction of looking at group homes and what's being done about group homes, because I've said the same thing to the media when they've talked to me. I don't know if this is the solution.
I share the same concerns. It's a group home, we talk about it really generically, it's not. I mean, there is so many different versions of what a group home is and isn't. We can't keep track of it. We have a hard time counting them because the state does a horrible job of telling us where they're at. It's very complex. It may be open us up to be really inconsistent with what the map looks like, because they're also popping up and going away continuously, where parks don't, right? Daycares generally don't, and the map tends to be much more consistent.
And I guess I would say, because we don't have to chop the whole tree down right away, we want to, but I would say maybe increase to 500 or 600 feet for parks, 1,000 for the churches, the schools. I just say 1,000 for offenders, because I don't necessarily want them concentrating together. That's kind of my instinct. But the research could say different. I say we do implement something like that now, and then over the next 6 months to a year, we can give you all time to say, how do we hone in on the group homes where we're seeing these issues? How do we actually locate these? It shouldn't be something that is cost prohibitive to the city to figure it out, or time intensive where it's keeping you from doing other stuff, right? But I think over the course of a year, we should be able to narrow that down. We can put this in place sooner than later, and then we can narrow it down over time, and in a year we can maybe make some amendments to what we're working on now. Makes sense to me.
I think it's a very fair approach. I also would be concerned about community members if they lived in one of these little sections and we didn't make a rule about 1,000 feet from another offender. I would be mad if I lived there. I'd be like, wait a minute, I got three on my block and nobody has anywhere around me.
Yep.
Like, because I live in that area where I'm not close enough to the park. I think that's I'd be mad as a homeowner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that doesn't fall under reasonable, right? And that's what we have to do. All of this has to be reasonable.
Right. Yeah. So I think then we have it. Look at 500 or 600 feet, 1,000 for churches, for schools, and then offenders, 1,000 between offenders. That's what.
Well, and I think the two cases you talked about, the one was Dayton just didn't have, they just said nobody could be there, so it was 100% exclusion. So that's why that went to court, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we aren't doing that. And then the other one was because it was too broad, I think. So it was, seems reasonable. In the middle,
those
right?
cases, Jim, so the offender sued?
That's a good question. I forget who the plaintiff was. And, you know,
the state hasn't taken this up or pushed back.
No.
Okay, it's just the it has to be the vendor then.
An affected person, whether it was a owner of property or I don't remember, or a group, an organization that.
Yeah. I would envision, again, not for today, chopping down the whole tree. I'm with you. But this will come to roost because we're already getting a lot. Right, because we're late to the game on ordinance. Now we're going to correct that because there's a lot of momentum here. The state will get involved before long because they're just going to find out there's nowhere to go with them anywhere, and they're responsible for finding housing or getting them placed, I guess. And then when they first come out, I bet you the state will somehow.
Well, I think we have a map where we can show them where they can go, right?
right? Yeah. Well, I would have to say, like, we
there's probably,
I agree,
somewhere the state's going to say, like, wait a minute, they can't go anywhere in the whole state now.
And I think that's a,
by
that's,
the way,
I think that's a, yeah, that's right, a larger, and I'm happy to have a conversation with the state and say, listen, I want you guys to be honest about the systems that you create,
yeah,
that push people to certain areas, and when we plug those holes, now you get stressed out. Why don't you work with us on the upstream stuff? And then you still have to spread this out because we're not going to tolerate you putting all of that stuff on us in the pack. So if they want to have that conversation, I'm happy to have that conversation.
Or DOC is the facilities to figure it out.
100%. It'll force a conversation that needs to be had.
Yeah. They can go to West Lake.
Yeah, wherever. And I'll tell you, the community is fired up. Like, they would not, they don't support them being out. I mean, the questions that I get at a community meeting the other day at Islamic Center, and they could not understand, like, if they're level three, I explained to them what one, two, and three was. If they're level three and they're likely to offend, why are they out? And I'm like, nobody knows.
It's above our pay grade.
Yeah.
Just quickly to follow up on, let's take a chance here. Another way to look at this map is there's 22% of all resident rent that are available. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So if you could turn that red into the 22%, the flip side of this
is we have lots of places.
We got 25% of our residents that are still available.
Yeah.
They can live in 610
West. Yeah. So do we have
put parks?
Do we have a general consensus on that approach then? 500 to 600.
Not a problem.
500 to 600 from the playgrounds, 1,000 for churches and schools, and then from offenders, 1,000 as well.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're okay with the 78 creeping up.
Yes.
A bit.
Yeah.
Got it.
Mayor, are you comfortable enough with this and council that we'd come back with an actual ordinance to present to council?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I think at that one, we also just need to touch on
special session.
But
Friday meeting?
You got to be careful with that because somebody may listen to this and be like, "Well, let's get on it." I'm
just kidding.
I was going to say that, but also just so public understands, say, "Hey, this is what we're doing for now." We're also taking a look into congregate care facilities and what we can do to address that. And congregate care facility folks will be appreciative of that as well.
Yeah.
For my conversations with them.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right. Any further comments? Thank you for all the work on this.
Of course.
And Chief, thank you for all the support on this. Thanks, everybody. Councilmember Klonowski, are you okay with that approach?
That sounds good to me.
All right, so it seems like we have a consensus. Thank you, everybody, and meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.